hundreds. Rowan wondered if every single assassin from that desert keep had come to honor their debt to the young woman. A lethal legion in themselves. And Galen. Rowan turned to the Crown Prince of Wendlin.
How many? He asked. How many did you bring?
Galen only smiled a bit and pointed to the eastern horizon, where white sails now broke over its rim. Ship after ship after ship, each bearing the cobalt flag of Wendlin.
Tell Aelin Galathinius that Wendlin has never forgotten Evelyn Ashriver,
Galen said to him. To Adian.
Or Terrison.
Adian fell to his knees in the sand, as Wendlin's armada spread before them.
I promise you that no matter how far I go, no matter the cost, when you call for my aid, I will come.
Aelin had told him she'd sworn to Darrow. I'm going to call in old debts and promises, to raise an army of assassins and thieves and exiles and commoners. And she had. She had meant and accomplished every word of it. Rowan counted the ships that slid over the horizon, counted the ships in their own armada, added Rolf's and the Mycenaeans he was rallying in the north.
Holy gods,
Dorian breathed, as Wendlin's armada kept spreading wider and wider. Tears slid down Adian's face as he silently sobbed.
Where are our allies, Aelin? Where are our armies?
She had taken the criticism. Taken it, because he knew she hadn't wanted to disappoint them if she failed. Rowan put a hand on Adian's shoulder.
All of it, for Terrison,
she had said, that day she'd revealed she'd schemed her way into getting Aerobin's fortune. And Rowan knew that every step she had taken, every plan and calculation, every secret and desperate gamble, for Terrison, for them, for a better world. Aelin Galathinius had raised an army not just to challenge Morath, but to rattle the stars. She'd known that she would not get to lead it, but she would still hold true to her promise to Darrow.
I promise you on my blood, on my family's name, that I will not turn my back on Terrison as you have turned your back on me.
And the last piece of it. If Kaol Westfall and Nezrin Falik could rally forces from the southern continent. Adian at last looked up at him, eyes wide as he came to the same realization. A chance. His wife, his mate, had bought them a fool's shot at this war. And she did not believe that they would come for her.
Galen?
Rowan went still as death at the voice that floated over the dunes, at the golden-haired woman who wore the skin of his beloved. Adian shot to his feet, about to snarl, when Rowan gripped his arm. When Lysandra, as Aelin, as she had promised, swept for them, grinning wide. That smile. It punched a hole through his heart. Lysandra had taught herself Aelin's smile, that bit of wickedness and delight, honed with that razor edge of cruelty. Lysandra's acting, honed in the same hellhole Aelin had learned hers, was flawless as she spoke to Galen. As she spoke to Ilias, embracing him like a long-lost friend and a relieved ally. Adian was trembling beside him, but the world could not know. Their allies, their enemies could not know that the immortal fire of Mala had been stolen, leashed. Galen said to the one whom he believed to be his cousin,
"Where now?"
Lysandra looked to him, then to Adian, not a sign of regret or guilt or doubt on her face. We go north, to Terrasen. Rowan's stomach turned leaden. But Lysandra caught his eye and said steady and casually, Prince, I need you to retrieve something for me before you join us in the north.
Find her, find her, find her, the shifter seemed to beg.
Rowan nodded, at a loss for words. Lysandra took his hand, squeezed it once in thanks, a polite public farewell between a queen and her consort, and stepped away. Come, Lysandra said to Galen and Ilias, motioning them toward where a white-faced Ansel and frowning Endo waited. We have matters to discuss before we head out. Then their little company was alone once more. Adian's hands clenched and unclenched at his sides as he gazed after the shapeshifter wearing Aelin's skin, leading their allies down the beach, to give them privacy. An army to take on Morath, to give them a fighting chance. Sand whispered behind him as Lorcan stepped up to his side.
I will go with you. I will help you get her back.
Gavriel rasped.
We'll find her.
Adin at last looked away from Lysandra at that. But he said nothing to his father, had said nothing to him at all since they'd landed on the beach. Elide took a limping step closer, her voice as raw as Gavriel's.
Together. We'll go together.
Lorcan gave the Lady of Peranth an assessing look that she made a point to ignore. His eyes flickered as he said to Rowan,
Fenris is with her. He'll know we're coming for her. Try to leave tracks if he can.
If Maeve didn't have him on lockdown. But Fenris had battled the Blood Oath every day since swearing it. And if he was all that now stood between Cairn and Aelin, Rowan didn't let himself think about Cairn, about what Maeve had already had him do, or would do to her before the end. No, Fenris would fight it, and Aelin would fight it. Aelin would never stop fighting. Rowan faced Adian, and the warrior prince again peeled his attention away from Lysandra long enough to meet his eyes. Adian understood the look, and put a hand on the sword of Orin's hilt.
I'll go north, with her, to oversee the armies, make sure it's all in place.
Rowan clasped Adian's forearm.
The lines have to hold. Buy us whatever time you can, brother.
Adian gripped his forearm in return, eyes burning bright. Rowan knew how much it killed him. But if the world believed Aelin was returning north, then one of her generals had to be at her side to lead her armies. And since Adian commanded the loyalty of the Bane.
Bring her back, Prince, Adian said,
voice cracking.
Bring her home.
Rowan held his brother's stare and nodded.
We will see you again. All of you.
He did not waste words persuading the warrior prince to forgive the shifter. He wasn't entirely sure what to even make of Aelin and Lysandra's plan, what his role would have been in it. Dorian stepped forward, but glanced to Manon, who was staring toward the sea as if she could see wherever Maeve had spirited away her ship. Using that cloaking power she'd wielded to hide Fenris and Gavriel in Skull's Bay, hide her armada from the eyes of Eelwe.
The witches fly north, Dorian said, and I will go with them, to see if I can do what needs to be done. Stay with us,
Rowan offered,
We'll find a way to deal with the keys and the lock and the gods. All of it.
Dorian shook his head.
If you go after Maeve, the keys should be kept far away. If I can help by doing this, by finding the third, I will serve you better that way.
You'll likely die, Adian cut in sharply. We go north to bloodshed and killing fields. You head into dangers far worse than that. Morath will be waiting.
Rowan cut him a glare, but his brother was beyond caring.
No.
Adian was riding a vicious, vulnerable edge right now, and it wouldn't take much for that edge to turn lethal. Especially when Dorian had played his part in separating Aelin from their group. Dorian again looked to Manon, who now smiled faintly at him. It was a smile that softened her face, made it come alive.
He won't die if I can help it, the witch said, then surveyed them all. We journey to find the Krokans, to rally what forces they might have.
A witch army to counter the Iron Teeth legions. Hope. Precious, fragile hope stirred Rowan's blood. Manon merely jerked her chin in farewell and prowled up the bluff to her coven. So Rowan nodded to Dorian. But the man bowed his head. Not the gesture of a friend to a friend, but of one king to another. Consort, he wanted to say. He was just her consort. Even if she'd married him so he could have the legal right to save Terrasen and rebuild it, to command the armies she'd given everything to gather for them.
When we are done, I will join you in Terrasen, Adian, the King of Otterland promised. So that when you get back, Rowan, when both of you get back, there will be something left to fight for.
Adian seemed to consider, to weigh the man's words and expression. And then the general prince stepped forward and embraced the king. It was quick and hard, and Dorian flinched. But that edge in Adian's grief-dull eyes had been eased a bit. Silently, Adian glanced at Damaris, sheathed at Dorian's side. The blade of Otterland's first and greatest king. Adian seemed to weigh its presence. Who bore it? At last, the general prince nodded, more to himself than anyone. But Dorian still bowed his head in thanks. When Adian had stalked toward the longboats, deliberately stepping around Lysandra Aelin when she tried to speak to him, Rowan said to the king,
You trust the witches?
A nod. They're leaving two wyverns to guard your ship to the edge of the continent. From there, they'll join us again, and you'll set off wherever you need to go. Maeve could have taken her anywhere, vanished that ship halfway across the world. Rowan said to Dorian,
Thank you.
Don't thank me. A half smile.
Thank Manon.
If they all lived through this, if he got Aelin back, he would. He embraced Dorian, wished the king well, and watched the man climb up the sandbank to the white-haired witch who waited for him. Lysandra was already giving orders to Galen and Ilias regarding transporting the 200 silent assassins onto Wendland's ships, Adian monitoring with crossed arms. Ansel was deep in conversation with Endymion, who didn't seem to quite know what to do with the red-haired queen with a wolf smile. Ansel, however, seemed already inclined to raise hell and have a damn good time doing it. Rowan wished he had more than a moment to spare to thank them both. To thank Enda and each one of his cousins. All was set. All was ready for that desperate push north, as Aelin had planned.
There would be no rest, no waiting. They did not have the time to spare. The wyverns stirred, flapping their wings. Dorian climbed into the saddle behind Manon and wrapped his arms around her waist. The witch said something that made him smile. Truly smile. Dorian lifted his hand in farewell, wincing as Abraxos soared into the skies. 10 other wyverns took to the air behind them. The grinning golden-haired witch, Asterin, and a slender, black-haired, green-eyed one named Briar, waited atop their mounts for Gavriel, Lorkin, and Elide, to carry them to the ship that would take them hunting across the sea. Lorkin made to step toward Elide as she approached Asterin's wyvern, but she ignored him. Didn't even look at the male, as she took Asterin's hand and was hauled up into the saddle. And though Lorkin hit it well, Rowan caught the glimmer of devastation on those centuries-hardened features. Gabriel's barked curse as he gripped the golden-haired witch's waist was the only sound of his unease as they flapped into the sky. Only when they were all airborne did Rowan slowly walk up the sandy hill, tying Goldrin's ancient scabbard to his knife belt as he went. Her blood-splattered shirt was still lying there, just to the side of the pool of her blood soaking the sand. He had no doubt Cairn had purposely left it. Rowan bent, picking up the shirt, running his thumbs over the soft fabric. The coven faded into the horizon. His companions reached their ship, and the others were readying to move the army his mate had summoned for them, pushing the longboats into the surf. Rowan brought the shirt to his face and breathed in her scent. Felt something stir in him. Felt the bond flicker. He let the shirt drop, let the wind carry it far out to sea, far away from this blood-drenched place that reeked of pain.
I will find you.
Rowan shifted and soared high on a fast, wicked wind of his own making, the glimmering sea sprawling to his right, the marshes a green and gray tangle to his left. Chaining the wind to him, swiftly catching up with his companions now flying down the coast, he committed her scent to memory, committed that flicker in the bond to memory. That flicker he could have sworn he felt in answer, like the fluttering heart of an ember. Unleashing a cry that set the world trembling, Prince Rowan Whitethorn Galathinius, consort of the Queen of Terrasen, began the hunt to find his wife. This has been an Audible Studios production of Empire of Storms, Book 5 in the Throne of Glass series, written by Sarah J. Maas, performed by Elizabeth Evans. Producer Mike Charzik. Copyright 2016 by Sarah J. Maas. Production copyright 2016 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.